SQL Down Under is a podcast for professionals working in the SQL Server community. SQL Server is a trademark of Microsoft Corporation. Opinions expressed during the podcast are individual opinions and may not reflect the opinions of SQL Down Under or of Microsoft Corporation. Introducing Show 89 with guest Aaron Stellato. Welcome. Our guest today is Aaron Stellato. Aaron's a senior program manager at Microsoft, working with data-related tools, which is why I was so keen to talk to Aaron today. So welcome, Aaron.
Thank you for having me, Craig.
No, it's all so good to see you.
Good to see you.
Awesome. And so tell us what you're doing now.
So I am the program manager for SQL Server Management Studio for SSMS. I'm on the Tools and Experiences team, which some people I think have called the SQL Tools team forever. We've kind of evolved a little bit to throw experiences in there because the tools really are the experience for the customer with SQL.
For most people, that's the thing they say.
Yeah, it is. And I actually had an interesting thread that I read about that the other day. But anyway... So I'm on that team. There's a host of us that work across the tools portfolio. I've also worked with Azure Data Studio, but SSMS is at a point where it needs someone full time, which I think folks are hopefully happy to hear. So that's me.
Yeah, look, with I suppose we should start with SQL Server Management Studio and the I still keep connecting into sites where people still have versions of it that were associated with the versions of SQL Server that they installed. Mm-hmm. And so I suppose the first concept is the idea that it's now quite disconnected from that.
Right, as of 2016, right? So in SQL Server 2016, we separated, and this was, I say this is BE, this is before Aaron. They separated the SQL Server SQL Server installer and SSMS. So back in the day, right, you installed both together, which meant that anytime there was a, and this was back when we didn't have cumulative updates, right? So we just had service packs. For 2014 and before. So you would get a service pack and when, and that would update SQL Server, the binaries, and then you would also potentially get an update to SSMS. And that was great in that it kept folks updated, right, with SSMS. But the challenge is that you could only update SSMS in line with a SQL Server service pack. Yeah. So that was decoupled in the 2016 release, which gave us a lot of freedom in terms of releases and our schedule. But the drawback is, as you've noted, that not a lot of folks always are aware that a new version is out and then that they could be benefiting from improvements there. So
In fact, they're often not aware that the later version would work with the version that they're using as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that's been part of the misconception. And so with the current released one, which we're at version 20 at the moment out the door, so how far back do we support versions of SQL Server with that?
We go back to what is supported, which right now we would say is at SQL 2016, right? So we would go back to 2016. Now, do we have people connecting to older versions? I can tell you without a doubt that we do.
Absolutely. I use it all the time with older versions.
Yeah. So while not technically supported, I know that folks do that. And we actually, one of the things that we've just done, which is something that's new, is that with the 20 release, we should be notifying folks who are running early releases, meaning if you're running 19 or 18, you would get notified that there is a 20. Historically, we've only notified for an update within the same version. So like when you were on 19.2, you'd get notified about a 19.3. But in this case, because we've been noticing there's a lag, right? So I have information on what version of SSMS folks are running. We're trying to encourage or make folks more aware of this later release.
Yeah. Okay. So in terms of things that have appeared in more recent versions, what value do the more recent versions offer over where, let's say, somebody who was on 2016 or 20, so on?
That's a good question. A lot of the improvements, quite frankly, have been related to bug fixes, but there have been new functionality related to data classification, related to always encrypted, related to managed instance, MI link. So those are some things that really have gained momentum in the late 18 versions into 19 and now into 20. The biggest things that we've done lately are more under the covers that are not visual things for folks, which could also contribute to some of the frustration that users might have thinking that there aren't really any updates to SSMS. But, you know, when you have a house, there's lots of cosmetic things that you can do, right? You can get new flooring, or you can paint, or you can put cement in your driveway. But then there's always things that happen inside that people don't see, like related to your plumbing or electricity or your furnace, right? So we've been doing work related to the plumbing and the drivers, going back even from 18 to 19. So there's a SQL client driver, right? That's fundamental. Mm-hmm. And in 18, we used System Data SQL Client. And in 19, we went to Microsoft Data SQL Client. And a driver change is like a furnace change, right? Like it's a big deal. Right. And then we did it again from 19 to 20. So then we went from Microsoft Data SQL Client 3X to Microsoft Data Client 5X, which is essentially another furnace change, really. So it's not just, you know, replacing a couple pipes. It's a big swap. I think that is easy for folks not to see or understand, because it's not visual.
Yep. No, that's good. If I suppose the other thing that comes up all the time is a discussion about Azure Data Studio and then how you see Management Studio relating to Azure Data Studio.
Right. Right. So I started back in January of 2022, and I spent probably the first 3 to 6 months really digging into that, because I came in with probably a very common misunderstanding of Azure Data Studio, and also that doesn't really fit what I need, so I'm not going to spend time on it. Mm-hmm. And there's quite a history to Azure Data Studio. I won't go in depth on all of it, but fundamental, what people need to know is that it's not a replacement for SSMS, right? That's item number one. Mm-hmm. And that's not what it's designed to do, ever. It's to help the cross-platform folks, right, who are running on Linux or Mac OS, complete the work that they need to do without having to install a container or a VM that's running Windows so that they can run SSMS.
Yeah, which is way too hard for them.
Yeah. Right?
So, I mean, for example, we have a T-SQL class that we have an online course. And, I remember the first time I had somebody who just had a Mac box and who wanted to do the course, and you normally just assume somebody can install Management Studio, but of course they couldn't. They could, but the complexity of what would be involved when you got somebody starting an introductory T-SQL class, that's just was in a different ballpark to where they needed to be. And Azure Data Studio was a good fit there.
Exactly. And that's the thing, right? Azure Data Studio is for the folks who don't need all of SSMS, who are new to SQL, maybe who are junior folks, who are not data people, but who maybe need to have permission to connect and query the database for whatever reason. But it's a lightweight tool. It supports other platforms like Postgres and MySQL. It has a dark mode, which, as we know, a lot of folks really love and gravitate toward.
Which Management Studio sort of does if you play around with it registry wise and stuff, but it doesn't play nicely in dark mode.
It doesn't, and that's something we can come back to, because I've actually been trying to do some things in there, and it's very interesting. But
It must be so difficult, because it's not just that; it's every single dialogue tool window.
Right,
just goes on and on.
I read every piece of feedback that that I find, right? So whether that's on a blog post that I write, whether that's on a LinkedIn post that I have where folks comment, whether it's on Twitter and it gets brought to my attention, like I read every single one of those. And there are folks who are like, I don't know why you're not just implementing dark mode, just get a junior developer to do it. Like if you paid me, I'd come and do it. Side note, we are hiring for the team. It's on my LinkedIn. But it is, as you said, like because of when SSMS was originally released, and you have all this history, I'm sure, right? But for folks who do not, right? Management Studio was originally released in 2005. And it, at that point, right, there's a dependency on the Visual Studio shell. But at that time, when it was developed, there wasn't a dark theme in Visual Studio. So when we went and created all of these dialogues for Management Studio, of which there are, I don't know, hundreds, if not a thousand, right? Those were custom dialogues. And so when Visual Studio did introduce theming and dark mode, it wasn't just like a thing that we could slap on top of it and have it go, we're good. We have to go to either rewrite every dialogue. Holy cow, is that prohibitive, right? Or we have to go and make changes to support every single one of those. And so it's not just hire a junior developer and put them to work on it. Like there's a lot of other things that have to that we have to consider.
Yeah, it's interesting too. Like actually even the dialogues that are in Management Studio, I suppose been around long enough, I can sort of see the history of various dialogues. And interestingly, the UI style that's been applied in a few, you know, like there have been some over the years where I was just shaking my head. I remember when Audit first appeared in 2008. And I remember the first time I opened the dialogue up, there were two items with boxes beside them, but they said exactly the same word. And I was like staring at them thinking, you know, what on earth could they possibly be talking about? And then one day I happened to drag the side of the window to the side and the rest of the label appeared.
Oh, interesting.
I thought, oh my goodness. And yet that was the default size. But I noticed now they sort of word wrapped those and so on. But the one that got me the most actually was in 2012, the restore database dialogue. What happened is they actually cut off the bottom of it if you're on a different screen resolution. But instead of having the window just go off the edge of the page where it looked like there was more, they actually rounded off the window so it looked like that was the entire window.
And no scroll bar on the side.
The thing, no scroll bar. But, of course, the beautiful thing was the restore button was in the bottom right. And so the button that actually did the restore was the thing that disappeared off the screen. Yeah. And I remember we were building things and we were sending for Microsoft actually, and we were sending them into a testing team and they kept coming back and going, there is no restore button. And we're going, yes, there is. And it was so funny. I even had one of the MVPs that I did work with. He kept saying, so do you have to script restores now? because he couldn't find the button, you know? And so, look, I do not underestimate the complexity of getting that stuff right. And then, of course, dealing with different languages and it just goes on and on and on. And I can easily imagine the complexity involved.
Yeah. I appreciate that you do. Not everyone does, but SSMS is wide and deep. Right? Like the amount of functionality that it covers, and even within certain areas, the depth of that. And Query Editor is a prime example, right? Query Editor has all kinds of things that it can do. And folks continue to ask for more things. Whereas if you look at Azure Data Studio, right? The time it would take for us to re-implement all of that in Azure Data Studio is just prohibitive, right? So I would hope that folks would realize that they're not meant to be equal, right? They each serve their own niche. There's some things that we could do on the Azure Data Studio side to make that more complete. And we have done some of those, right? And there are places where I think it shines over SSMS and where it's definitely the more appropriate tool for folks to use. But we're not trying to push folks one way or the other. right? No, use the tool that's right for you.
It's certainly light and fast by comparison. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that's really, really good. And as I said, the cross-platform thing. Look, the other thing that I find confuses people with that is it's sort of obviously built on a VS Code shell, Visual Studio Code shell. And so the question is, why is it a separate thing and not just an add-on?
Why is it not an extension
to Visual Studio
Code? Visual Studio and VS Code. VS Code is much more command line, right? So if you go into like the connection experience, for example, if you install the MS SQL extension, right? So you can connect to SQL Server using the MS SQL extension, which our team also creates, right? When you install that, the connection experience in there is like, as somebody who's worked with SQL for a long time, I even initially was like, wait, what am I looking at? Like, what do I need to do?
How do you do this?
And that is because that's a tenant of that application, right? Because it's much more of a developer tool that it is much less in terms of a rich UX. And so there were limitations in what we wanted to do that at that time, right? This was back in 2017, even probably a little bit before that. The work that would have been necessary to make that extension more of a UX was kind of a blocker. And so, we ended up with Azure Data Studio.
Understood.
Now, if we...
Yeah, it's interesting because I find people often when they first open VS Code, they can't even really work out how to navigate around. It depends on the background they come from.
But, yes, I am that person. When I first opened Visual Studio Code, I'm like, well, this looks pretty, but I don't know where to go. And I don't know. And it's a whole different set of icons. And that's feedback that I would get about Azure Data Studio, right? People would be like, it looks nothing like SSMS. I can't find anything. And okay, fair, but like it wasn't fair meant call. To be, right? Like it's a different tool for a different audience. So. Mm.
That's good. Although I suppose one of the things I should ask about then too is apart from SQL Server, the things that we can connect to with the different tools. So, I mean, you mentioned Postgres earlier, and I think you mentioned MySQL. Was it?
And then there's Cosmos.
So supported out of Data Studio and Cosmos. Yeah. Oh, actually, I hadn't realized there was a Cosmos connection in there because I tend to use a different tool for Cosmos, but that's interesting.
There's also
so that's part of Data Studio as well.
There's also a third party extension from MongoDB for connecting to their option, which exists in Azure. I mean, it allows some folks who are working across multiple platforms, it's everything in one place.
Yeah. What about in the case of Management Studio? Because across there, there was a period where it started connecting to lots of other things like storage accounts and things and so on. What's the thinking there?
So you can still connect to storage accounts, but we haven't done a lot there of late. And we've had some conversations about how do we improve SSMS in terms of support for Azure. In my mind, once we get past the next release of SSMS 21, some of my work while the team is doing that is identifying those gaps between the Azure SQL experience and the SQL Server on-prem experience and what we can do there. And a simple example is like within the user properties, when you're connected to Azure SQL, you can't view the properties, right? Whereas when you're connected to SQL Server, you can right click, go to the properties of the user, and you get that dialogue. So there are things like that where I think we could do better. And then in terms of
some of that depends on whether you're connected though too. Like, I mean, if I'm connected to an Azure SQL database, for example, if I right click the database and look at the properties, it'll have things like the service level objective and stuff like that, but it doesn't have the current one necessarily. And so, but if I connect, there's like a, it's like it was showing me a previous one or something. I'm not sure.
I'm wondering.
I seem to get a slightly different effect depending upon when I'm how I'm connected or whatever. But yeah, it's interesting.
That is not like...
But yeah, certainly a lot of the objects are those same things that you're used to being there are not there.
That's correct. Right. And some of that is expected, right? And is okay. But in terms of what we are exposing that is the same as what you would expect in SQL Server, I would like us to have some consistency. Yep. So even though there's some other things like Storage Explorer, I can't think of anything else at the moment, but I would rather than create new right now, which I know is flashy and shiny and fun, I also think it's important to revisit what you have and make it complete.
It is so refreshing to hear you say that because I look at so many of the things that seem over the years that just chase endless new things. And you just think a bit of effort on some of the things that have been around a long time could just impact so many people.
Well, it's interesting. I used to work at a software company long before I came to Microsoft, long before I was a consultant. And the thing that I really learned there is that the new stuff is what sells, right? So that tends to be a direction that a lot of engineering, and I'm not just saying Microsoft, like engineering anywhere, right? Like, let's go create new because that's what sells. And I get that, but there's a giant user base for SSMS who like are complaining about problems with stuff that's there. And so my job is, do I fix that or do I add the new stuff that people want to see, and how do I balance that?
Yeah, that's right. And if you just add new stuff and it's got issues then as well, you know, you're just adding to the pile
debt.
Of stuff.
Well, adding to the technical
debt. It's actually something even with the product itself. I remember even in, say, SQL Server 2014 being in meetings where, you know, I was asking about, say, T-SQL enhancements. Mm-hmm. And I literally had product group people saying to me, why do you need any? You know, and I was like, wow, they thought T-SQL was dumb, you know, and I thought, no, don't say that, you know, like, but the weird thing is that at that stage, there was a funky focus where they said, well, if we added these things to the language, tell me how many more licenses we'd sell. That was the sort of logic that was being applied. And the problem is, you know, if you applied that to Management Studio and said, okay, if I fix these 100 bugs, you know, how many more licenses would you sell? You can't answer that question.
You can't. And for those who aren't aware, right, the challenge is that SSMS is a free tool, right?
Yep.
And a given user may connect to one database or they may connect to 100. And so translating a user's use to like licenses is extremely difficult.
Yeah, that's diabolically difficult. Right. There's just no easy way to do that. And in fact, one of the things that I have a sort of a bit of an issue with a lot of the fabric directions at the moment is that there's a real sort of mixture between user licensing and server licensing. You know, it's sort of, I think it's because it all comes from a user licensing background. Mm-hmm. And to me, that just doesn't apply to services and things like that. And I just run into way too many things where, yeah, like somebody leaves the company and suddenly things stop working because they've built it off something like, I don't know, Power Automate or any of these tools. Right. And it was done on a user licensing basis. And it's one of the things I've always loved with SQL Server is they've understood a lot of that server stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, and in fact, there was a discussion the other day. It's like if you look at objects in Fabric, no matter who you are, if you create an object in Fabric, you own it. Whereas in SQL Server, if I'm in the DBO group, the database owner group, if I create an object, DBO owns the object, not me. And you know, I think that they need the same sort of logic being applied in those other areas. And yeah, I think it's over the years that sort of stuff was much better thought out in the server.
Yeah, product. It's definitely a different model. And to tie into something I said earlier and all about the cost, right? Even though I say that SSMS is a free tool, I have gotten feedback from the people that use it who say, our company has spent hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars on licenses and you're not taking care of this tool, right? Yep. That was an interesting data point in terms of how
people could view SSMS. You were mentioning before, it's the thing that people see, right? So Like if mm-hmm. I look at people often when they're comparing, say, SQL Server and Postgres or something like that, what they start talking about is the difference in the tools. Mm-hmm. They don't actually talk about the difference in the database engine, which is really the thing that they should be talking about. But they all talk about the fact that SQL Server's better, but what they mean is that Management Studio is better.
Which is fascinating and a little bit frightening to me. Right?
Mm-hmm.
yeah. But to your point about Fabric, I think that there's been feedback that the billing model or the way that it works within Azure compared to the client and the license model that you and I don't want to say grew up with, right, but have known for so long, right, that the capacity model is meant to be just a much simpler way of doing things. But you're correct in that there's a trickle down effect, right, in terms of ownership that could potentially be problematic if folks aren't paying attention.
Yeah, oh, it certainly is already problematic in a lot of places. Yep. And so, look, actually, another one I want to ask you about is the state with SQL Server data tools. I mean, we actually use that quite a bit on different sites. I don't tend to use it to deploy things very often. I do tend to keep projects in source control. I see people making changes in Management Studio, and then they just do schema compares and suck all the changes into the source control instead. How much do you see people using that at present? And one of the things that it seems to struggle with is keeping up with all the things that are being added to all the different types of projects that it can deal with, because it's not just simple SQL Server database projects.
So when you're saying projects, you're not necessarily saying SQL projects and source control at the database level. You're saying more projects within Visual Studio.
Hi, this is Greg. Just wanted to thank you for listening to this show and let you know that if you'd like to let me teach you more about SQL Server, we now have both free courses and low-cost courses available online and on demand. The courses include detailed hands-on lab work for you to complete to reinforce your learning, and there are more courses coming in the next few months. You'll find details at training.sqldownunder.com. Within Visual Studio, with SQL Server data tools.
So SSDT's use compared to like Management Studio, very different, right? But also the Visual Studio use compared to Management Studio, also very different, right? And there are some folks like yourself who navigate across multiple tools, and there are some who just sit in one. I think that a lot of the folks who are in SSDT are also spending a lot of time in Visual Studio and are not necessarily the SSMS folks, right? So on the SSDT side, the challenge I think that sometimes we have is the dependency, right, on Visual Studio and then making sure we're staying current when we can with them. And that has been a challenge. And I think that we are still kind of catching up to where we need to be. I do think that in the past 18 months, the team has done a good job the team has made strides in catching up to where they can, but there are some gaps that we could probably improve.
Yeah, it's interesting. If I compare it when I've worked with, say, the Redgate tools or other sort of tools, a lot of those I find easier to work with. But what I've found is that the database projects in general tend to be more complete in terms of the objects and things they deal with. So like I see third-party tools that do a fairly good job of a lot of things, but as soon as you started having, I don't know, various certificates or, you know, broker queues or, you know, all sorts of things, data tools actually did a better job of like covering all of the objects that could be part of the project.
And we should, because what underpins project SQL projects, right, is DACFX. And so DACFX is also, it's a library within Management Studio, within Azure Data Studio, in multiple places, right? Notably within projects, where changes that occur within the engine that affect schema, et cetera, really do have to be propagated over to DACFX, which is why it becomes more complete as a tool for database development, because it is more aware of the general as well as sometimes the edge cases, which a third party tool could miss.
Yeah. Look, and the final area of these, of course, are the command line tools. Mm-hmm. And so just where we're at with that. So notably, a little while ago, we've had a variety of tools over the years, but the Go SQL command and so on appearing in recent times. And so what's the current state of play with the command line tools?
So SQL CMD in its native original form, right, is still there. But then the Go SQL CMD is available in the Go programming language, which is then cross-platform. So, right, SQL CMD is not. So there's a benefit there, as well as we have improved security options within the Go SQL CMD. So it's nearing 100% compatibility with what we have in SQL CMD. And eventually you will see the Go version replace the existing one. And the idea with that is that should be hopefully seamless for folks, and they really shouldn't. They shouldn't see anything related to it, but it's hard to really replace one with the other in a quick fashion, right? Because SQL CMD will have to have a certain amount of time before it can be truly deprecated or removed. So
one of the areas in Management Studio that I still find a bit clunky is it's like, in SQL Server, we've never had great stuff for like file input and output. I still find some of the, it's not too bad, the export out to like CSVs or things like that and so on. I still find the bringing those things in more complicated than I wish it was. But I think in the language, I've never understood, like we have a bulk import, we've never had a bulk export. For example, you know, it was like they initially sort of avoided anything that involved operating system files or things to some extent. It just sort of strikes me as an area that that a lot of people spend time bringing things in and out of files, and yet it's an area that I think is still harder than it needs to be. I don't know if there's any thoughts around that.
When you say that, there's a whole set of things that go through my head. So import export wizard, right? One piece. And then there's another piece that's within SSMS. Golly, why can't I think of it right now?
Yeah, there's like for import, there's the flat file import wizard. And then there's another one that actually import of files as well.
Yeah, and the flat file is... really, I don't want to say it's deprecated, but we would recommend that folks use the import export instead, right? Indeed. And I think, and this is again way before me, so I could be making this up, but in terms of bringing data in and moving it around, there's SSIS, right? And back in the day, right? Back in the SQL 2000, it was DTS, right? If I remember correctly, Data Transform Services.
It was in 2000,
and so I think some of the challenge is either that was created to fill a gap, right, or that was created to fill a need at that time, and then that just continued to evolve and grow, right? And so making the quick import export, the need for that didn't seem as obvious because we had this other option, which is very, I mean, people did training courses on that, right? Like SSIS was a mystery to me. Like,
it's
I know.
Yeah, the irony is, again, we have online training that we have in place for SSIS, and every week there are still people doing SSIS training. So, yeah, it's and same with reporting services. I might add, there's still people doing that all the time. It's interesting. They're treated like they're almost dead, these things, but they're not.
They are used for sure. Analysis service as well, right? You put the ASIS, RS, all in there together. Those extensions that are in Visual Studio, and then basically they're built into SSMS right now. Like those are still used. I know that.
Yeah. It's just interesting that when I spend time on the Q&A forums, the number of times I see questions like, you know, how do I write the contents of this table to a file? You know, and people just find stuff like that hard. Yet you'd hope that would sort of thing would be really easy.
So would you, like, when you mentioned that we have a bulk import, right, you meant the T-SQL as opposed to using BCP to import or export, right, command line.
Yep, yeah. Completely, yeah. Because they're trying to do it from in T-SQL rather than at the command line. Because often, in many cases, they don't have access to a command line.
And
some people.
And so, in terms of writing the data out to a file, right? You and I both know this. You could select it. You could write the command with the T-SQL and then change the outputs to a flat file. But that isn't necessarily what folks are looking for either, is what you're suggesting.
Yeah, it's it's just interesting. It was the thing I was doing the other day. I sort of mentioned to you where I had I was dealing with multi-server queries and. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to get the thing that I had captured on the screen into a table. And it just struck me as that ended up being far more complicated than I thought it would be. You know, that's a topic for another day. But I suppose the final thing in that is, of course, there's a lot of PowerShell use too. And a lot of people with like DBA tools and so on doing great job. Sort of automating all these things. The I suppose that's the other main tool.
The command line.
Do you see people using other things like the scripter tools or those sort of things?
So there's definitely a level of experience, I think, that pushes folks from one to the other. I admit that I've looked at PowerShell I don't know how many times, and it does not click in my brain, and it's not for lack of trying, and it's not for lack of good examples and all of the work that the DBA tools folks and contributors have done. Right, so I totally own that, but I know that I'm not alone, because I know there are a ton of people who still love the right click menus and the script. And actually, there was just a new feedback item that I read today requesting something related to scripting, so I know that I'm not alone in that. And there are absolutely people who still use the right-click script functions or the script database and all of that.
All the time. Like if I mean, yesterday I was modifying views. I mean, it's still the easiest way, you know, right-click, script as, alter, modify the view, execute
exactly.
the code. Yeah.
So,
actually, right-click modify on a proc is still by far the easiest. Yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, we've done, I think, a good job keeping up with the SQL PowerShell with that module. The DBA tools, you know, that group has just taken all of that to a whole nother level, which is thrilling, quite frankly. Like, it's a very good thing.
Yeah. No, it's good. Actually, I had Rob Sewell on. I deal with Rob in a lot
Lovely
of things
individual.
In recent years, but he's an awesome guy. And he was on the show recently as well. And there's a whole bunch of people there involved with that and doing a great job.
Yep.
Hey, so listen, that's pretty much bring us to time, but like, where will people see you or what's coming up, I suppose, Erin?
Ooh, well, I just finished the conferencing circuit, which was Bits and FabCon. So nowhere to go for a bit, which is okay. We'll probably look to...
Yeah.
Bits was great. I quite frankly, I always love that event. I'm always honored to be able to attend. It's a great group.
Every year, if I think I wish I could be somewhere, Bits is it.
Yeah. Yep. It's in a class of its own. Probably not a lot for the summer, but then we'll look to the fall to see what's on the schedule and what I can attend there.
And so SSMS 21 or version 21 is the focus for the upcoming period.
Yep.
Like in general, what would people expect to see coming in that?
So there's a lot. We are migrating to the Visual Studio 2022 shell, right? So currently we are on the 2017, so we're a couple behind. So that's a big leap.
Mm-hmm. And it's also a 64-bit shell.
And it brings us to 64-bit, which has been requested for a long, long time. And those people who do imports and exports and return large data sets will be very happy, right, to see that.
Actually, one of the weird things that it'd be interesting to see if it changes as part of that is I've actually managed to blow up Object Explorer a few times.
Oh, I can see that.
Because I didn't realize it had a 64K limit.
Depending upon how many instances and databases and objects that are involved.
No, actually, the last time I saw it, it was the funniest thing. Actually, there was somebody who had written a script to look at the missing indexes DMV, and they would just create every index that thought was missing.
That makes me
but
sad.
But they forgot to check. But the beautiful thing is they forgot to check if they'd already created them. And so literally they were creating unbelievable numbers of duplicate indexes and things and stuff. And it was like the slowest database I've ever seen in my entire life. But I remember I expanded the indexes node and Object Explorer blew up.
Do you remember how many indexes they had? My record for one table is 86. And so you must have been way above that.
No. This was like thousands and thousands. It was like something else to behold. I have had customers though who had many thousands of databases on an instance, and that was something again I found at the time actually that Management Studio didn't cope very well with at all. But again, you know, it's very much an edge case. But in fact, what they had is they had a database per well, and they were drilling oil, and so but the thing is, at any point in time, there are only two or three databases that were active. But they had thousands and thousands and thousands of databases on the server. And it was actually the only like really good use case I've seen for auto close. because they all stayed closed most of the time, and then they'd start to use it and it would spin up the databases.
Right.
Which was awesome. But you know, most of the time, yeah, we don't want to see auto close on, but you know, I have run into people who can
that is a scenario where I would say yes. But I think that's the only one where I would say yes.
Yeah, that's right. There are not many. And in fact, it's so funny where I've seen that turned on incorrectly, actually. It's hilarious. I had a thing where the Microsoft office in Brisbane got me to go out and have a look at the site. It was the slowest application anybody had ever seen. And it was just an Access front end with a SQL Server back end. And with one user, it was like unbelievably slow. And of course, the typical thing that everybody does is they just throw in hardware at it that you'd kill for. And it was making no difference at all. And then when I finally had a look in the logs, of course, I just saw this endless, you know, spinning up and shutting down of the database. And what they had done is, of course, they had auto close on, but they had every UI element on the screen had a separate connection back to the database. So what would happen is as they would click on something on the screen, it would spin up the database at the back end, connect and run the query, and then spin it down again.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Wow.
It was the most bizarre thing.
I've had one issue as a consultant I had with auto close. That one beats the one that I had. And it was a very weird case. And I remember tracking that one down, and then it was such an easy fix, right? But finding it sometimes is tricky.
But it was in the logs, right? I mean, that was the thing that was odd in the logs. There was just this endless stream of the databases spinning.
There's
up
a host of great information in the error log. If you don't know, you definitely want to go check that thing out. Like, it is good starting point.
So what else in version 21, apart from going to a 64-bit shell, which is
exciting.
Cool.
So we'll revamp the connection dialog. We had to make some changes in SSMS 20 to support the new Microsoft Data Client version that we went to with the improved security. But we had originally planned to do a whole revamp in there. And what we plan to do is do things like move the database property to the front screen, right? Because right now you have to go the second. And for folks who are in Azure SQL, that's an extra step and they may not know. And then they can't connect because they don't have permission to Logical Master. That's a whole mess. So we'll bring that up.
And often they click the drop down and they can't see the list of databases anyway.
Right, it's a problem. And then we've gotten a lot of feedback about application intent read only. Right. That's an additional parameter that you have to type in. And so we want to bring that to the front and make that a selectable option. So,
make that easier.
So we've really like, we've asked like, what are the things that you do the most? And then we want to bring those to the front. We're also adding a connection string, which I don't like, I don't know that I would have ever used it, but I would hope that folks like you who are more on the developer side and other folks find that useful.
Sometimes, because I have a connection string sometimes, and it would be good to just
drop it in there,
paste it in, and then connect. Yeah, yeah. There are scenarios where that would be useful.
And then we also want to save.
A big one for me, hopefully the password.
Yes, so thing. I'll come to that. So we're also going to save connections so that just like we couldn't, like the the response to Azure Data Studio saving connections, naming them is been always positive. It's something that folks laud about Azure Data Studio. So we'll bring that functionality to SSMS. And then, as you've noted, there is a challenge with it retaining passwords. We really believe that it goes back to the Windows Credential Manager and the limitation in terms of how much it can hold, but it's not documented. And so therefore it appears, I think, inconsistent to folks. And so we're exploring other options for storing that information.
I never really actually think it's that. It's something happened around version 17. so something there where things just went down. I mean, to give you a simple example, I often open up Management Studio, connect to an Azure SQL database, and the username and password is there. And I connect, but then I go in Object Explorer and I go connect, and that same dialog appears, but there's no password. Now, there's been no increase in the number of passwords or anything like that, but literally it has sort of forgotten it. And the weird thing is from that point on, it's gone. And so if I just shut Management Studio, open it up again, the same one that it knew before isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and so on. So it's like something trashed it. And anyway, I don't know what it is, but if there's, it used to be sort of rock solid, and that's the thing. I can't sort of work out what's going on with that. But anyway, so if there's work on making that would make me a very happy person.
There is. We do plan to do work on that. We also plan to do some work related to the settings overall, because there's sometimes a misunderstanding between there are some settings that are specific to SSMS and others that are actually still owned by Visual Studio, and that's really not clear, and we can do better there. So we'll look to do that. And then we'll have a new installer. So rather than having to download the 600 or 500 and some odd meg file, right, every time you want to update, the vision here is that you'll install one time and then the subsequent updates would happen within the app. Those are both big requests.
Although, to be honest, that used to be a bigger deal, but nowadays I look at 600 meg files.
There's a lot of folks.
Yeah, but there'll still be lots of people who an issue.
Who complain about it. So we'll look to do that. So those are...
One thing I do love in Management Studio is the way it handles different languages. Because I've been sort of struggling to learn Mandarin for about 15 years, but the fact I can install the simplified Chinese one and then I can just flip between English. So the fact that it does English as well, it's just awesome. You know, I can sort of flip between the two to sort of force myself to sort of use it, but I don't have to give up the English one. Yeah, I can have that in there as well.
The localization. So there is definitely localization's part of the build process, part of the release process. I don't expect that to change at all. So
No, that's great.
Yep.
That's good. And perhaps a dark mode from what
all
you say.
I've committed to in terms of a dark mode is having the engineers understand what the work would be. So that we can evaluate what that looks like, and then also be clear on what we would have to trade off, right? So do you want the latest VS Shell and 64-bit and a new connection dialog, or do you want a dark mode? Like, I don't know that it's that simple, but like ultimately in the end, right? The job of the PM is what am I going to be able to get done in the time that I have? It's going to make the most number of people happy.
Yeah, I think people think there's like companies like Microsoft, there's like limitless funds to do these things.
They do.
But, yep. No.
And we don't. I have a certain number of engineers and they have the same number of hours in the day as everyone else. And they need time off and they need their vacations because they do great things. So it's all a balance. Yeah.
Terrific. Hey, so thanks so very much for your time
today.
Thank
you for having me, Greg. I appreciate it.
All good.